Hey everybody, Alex Newman here with The New American. You are listening to or watching Conversations That Matter, and we have a very special guest for you today. Wonderful, incredible doctor. Her name is Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and her bio is just incredible. So we're not going to spend the whole 20 minutes talking about her bio, but she was the past president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, probably the best medical association in America, at least that I know of. She's also a board-certified anesthesiologist. She graduated from Stanford and got her MD at the UCSF Medical School. She worked at the University of California at San Francisco's Medical Center. She got her anesthesia residency at Harvard's Beth Israel Hospital. She was actually on the faculty at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore before going back to California. And then, as if that wasn't all enough, she got her law degree from the Berkeley Law School, focusing on constitutional law, and then interned at the National Health Law Project. So she has many different areas of expertise, just really incredible. And one of the really interesting things that pops out on her bio is the time she spent in El Salvador. Maybe we'll have time to get into some of that. She was down there setting up some clinics for blood pressure screening. Just phenomenally interesting. Dr. Singleton, thank you so much for being with us. And I want to start off with, you know, what's going on with the COVID. We've got, we know that a lot of these doctors in these major hospitals, they're severely constrained in terms of what they can do for patients, even though there's been these studies by people like Dr. Peter McCullough on different ways to reduce mortality. And you say that having an independent physician might even save your life. Walk us through that, if you would.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show to talk about this. The whole concept of independent medicine is certainly why AAPS even began. And I must say, JBS's own Congressman Dr. McDonald was very involved in AAPS, that we're trying to preserve the private practice of medicine. Over the years, you can see that there's some sort of confluence between one, lack of a lot of insurers. 40 years ago, there were 801 companies that offered health insurance, and now we're consolidated down. And it's almost simultaneously that we've had the same thing happen with the doctors. It used to be most doctors were in private practice, and now only 45% of doctors in private practice are in private practice, and the rest are employed or somehow contracted with some big health system concern. Now, the problem there is if you are employed by one of the health systems, you follow their rules. They have their algorithms, they have their protocols, they have their formularies that of drugs that they want you to use. And you're pretty much stuck with that. Certainly, there's very few people who are in the position to say, I'll quit my job rather than not give the patient X, Y, or Z medicine. And so doctors are sort of trapped, and certainly the young residents are trapped. They just are sitting there with $400,000 worth of debt. They have a job. Somebody's hired them. And what are they supposed to do? But this is the landscape. And as this relates to COVID, there's still a problem, because if your patient is very sick and they have to go to the hospital, most hospitals these days have so-called hospitalists. And these are people who are hired by the hospital, and they take care of patients while they are in. And then your input might be more limited during that hospitalization.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And that actually goes right along with what I've been hearing from patients and even people working in the hospital about having their hands tied. I want to get into kind of how this happened. I know during the Obamacare discussion, a lot of people were talking about how this was going to massively consolidate the healthcare sector. It was going to bankrupt and put out of business a lot of these independent practitioners and force them to join up with one of these mega corporations, these huge hospitals. Was Congress, was the federal government responsible in some way for this trend? And is there anything that can be done to reverse it? I mean, how do physicians resist this? Is it even possible?
Oh, that's a very good question. And I think most of us who are looking at a lot of healthcare policy know that even though Obamacare was not Medicare for all or some sort of national health insurance program. That's what it was leading to. And some of the policies make it where it's difficult to have a doctor in private practice that you can go to and easily go to. And that way you'd say, throw up your hands and say, oh, why doesn't the government just pay for this? But there are other options. And of course, we're never going to see these advertised. There's something called direct primary care, where someone pays anywhere from $50 to $100 a month, depending on how big the family is or how old you are. And you get all the primary care you need. And sometimes endocrinologists that treat diabetics do this. So patients do have a way to see that doctor, to spend an hour with the doctor, not the usual 7-minute visit. And part of the misinformation, this is where some of this COVID stuff kind of comes in, along with everyday problems, is that in a 7-minute visit, who has time to go through all the pros and cons of the vaccine, your risk-benefit analysis, whether you should be a person who takes a vaccine, the risk-benefit analysis of what kind of prophylaxis, preventive medicine you should be on for COVID, or even the whole discussion of the seriousness, the numbers, your likelihood of dying should you get COVID or even catching COVID. All these discussions aren't occurring. Why? Because nobody has time in the doctor's office. And then what we get from the media are only what the government wants you to get. And this is just plain wrong. Medicine should be discussion of all sides of an issue. And it's been that way for years. I remember years ago, during the Vietnam War, there was a whole discussion of whether we really needed to give plasma to people who were in shock, and why we just couldn't give normal saline, because a lot of the plasma went to Vietnam. And it was this whole big discussion, and there were two different ways of doing it, whether you were East Coast or West Coast. No one was calling people morons. No one was vilifying them and calling them quacks. It was two different ways of doing things. And guess what? The patients did fine either way. So suddenly we can't have that discussion about COVID. And that's what's sickening. And as a physician, just it just galls me that politics has become the new doctor. What happened to us? What happened to our opinion? And so we do, we go back to these poor patients who are in the hospital, and they may have a private doctor with whom they have a good relationship. They might have even talked about what they might do if they happen to get sick. They go to the hospital, and the hospitalist says, oh no, we're not going to use that. We don't think it works. And generally talking about now ivermectin. And even though there's studies that show it works, there's studies that show it's safe. And to be able to have that discussion, you would think that two doctors could put their heads together and say, okay, there's nothing wrong with this patient, that even if you say ivermectin is not going to work, why can't we give it a try? And this is another thing that seems so different from how we do other medications. Imagine all the different trials cancer patients have. Cancer patients are given multiple drugs. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And these are even dangerous drugs. So why is it that we can't give a safe drug? And if it doesn't work, well, it didn't work. But if it does, then your patient is better off.
Yeah, what a incredible story. It's just unbelievable what's happening in the healthcare system. We're going to be going to a break in less than a minute, folks. But when we get to the other side of this break, we're going to talk about how you can find a private physician, what doctors can do who are struggling with this system, who are, you know, despairing about what's going on, and also this massive loss of confidence that we have seen show up in the polling data when it comes to Americans' trust in the medical system and the healthcare field. One of the polling companies just came out with some data showing that something like 44% of Americans only now trust the healthcare system, which is a dramatic decline from where it was just a year ago, early on in this COVID issue. So we will be right back on the other side of this break. We're with Dr. Marilyn Singleton, incredible medical expert and law expert. So stay tuned. We'll be back just on the other side of this break. Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is Conversations That Matter. I'm your host, Alex Newman, and we have a very special guest today, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. Her bio is incredible, a very brief, abbreviated version. She's an anesthesiologist. See, I can hardly even pronounce it. She was the past president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, an incredible group of wonderful, wonderful doctors. She also has a law degree, which really makes her uniquely qualified to comment on some of these issues that we're dealing with. Dr. Singleton, I want to start off with this massive loss of faith that we see in our healthcare system. The data shows that Americans are overwhelmingly losing trust in the medical system. Some of the poll, Gallup just came out with a poll that showed significantly less than half of Americans have actually taken these experimental COVID injections, despite this constant barrage that we're hearing from the government scientists, the government's medical experts. That leads me to believe that people really do not trust anymore, especially the government side of this medical system. What do you think is going on here? Why are people losing trust? Should people be losing trust, or should we be trusting in the system? What are your thoughts on this?
People definitely should be losing trust. As much as we can vilify Twitter and YouTube for their censorship, the one thing we can thank YouTube for is it captures, it's a memory hole. And when people can see the famous inscrutable Dr. Fauci say, "Wear a mask, no one should be wearing a mask. What a silly idea." And then suddenly he's saying wear two masks. And there are so many things that they have gone back and forth. And look at the lockdowns. My goodness, there was never any evidence that lockdowns worked. If you were going to quarantine people, it has to be done before a virus is running around. COVID was already loose. It's like, that's the point. You have to let it go and look at treatments rather than have people become alcoholics, drug addicts, wife beaters, children committing suicide. All these things occurred with the lockdown, not to mention the economic problems. And so, and as it turns out, there's tons of articles written by the World Health Organization where they say these things don't work, yet we did them. The question is why? Again, was it political? Was it to try to turn an election? I don't know, but people aren't stupid. They can just sit there and have the evidence laid out in front of them and come to their own conclusion. And plenty of people have come to the conclusion that any medical reason for any of these things that are done out the window, that they were all political reasons. And we can't have that happen. What happens when the next thing comes up and the next thing and the next thing? Is it going to be whatever the government administration says? And worse yet, look at these rules that Health and Human Services is suddenly doing. We didn't elect them. And so now we're having government completely by unelected bureaucrats. And I think this is starting to get to people too, that it's like, who made these people the gods of our health? And as over time that people were almost steered away from their own private physician, they have no one to turn to. And this is where the independent doctors come in and why we really have to count on them and find an independent doctor in your area. And that's one thing that AAPS tries to do. We have on our website, you can just go find an independent doctor, and we have links to DPC Frontier. That's all the doctors that have direct primary care, something called Join the Wedge that Twyla Brays, who is wrote a wonderful book about Big Brother in the exam room, and she started this Join the Wedge. And these are, again, independent private physicians, whether they be in solo practice or in a group. And there's a website called Self Pay Patient, com, and they have lists, including ours. They kind of double over on these lists of where you can find an independent doctor. And with regard to COVID treatments, I'll put this up just so people can see how it's set up on the AAPS page, right when you go to aapsonline.org, that there's a big thing that says home-based COVID treatment. You click that on, and then there's whole lists of doctors that you can get treatment from. And some are telemedicine, some are in your area. You can look at it by where you live. And it's a very valuable resource. And I urge people to go to that if you have any questions. Because just like in the old days, everybody needs a second opinion. And what does it hurt to get a second opinion if you have concerns? And you might find that these folks will be able to talk to you for a significant period of time. And I realize that's what patients really need. They need somebody to talk to.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing that out. I was actually going to ask, you know, how does a person go about finding an independent doctor that they can work with, that they can contract with, that they can trust? And I think you just provided some wonderful stuff. And on this topic of, you know, doctors being muzzled in the lockdowns, we had here in Florida, my governor convened a summit here in our state, and he brought together top medical experts and professors from Harvard, Stanford, Oxford, and they said the lockdowns didn't work. It was a disaster. You killed huge numbers of people. And of course, it was all censored. YouTube took it down, and all the fascist social media companies took it down. It's just absolutely incredible. And so I want to ask you, Dr. Singleton, how should a doctor deal with this? I mean, suppose a doctor is listening to this right now and they say, hey, I really would like to become an independent physician. I don't want to work for the man, the system anymore. How does one go about doing it? Is it really difficult? Do you have any tips for them if they want to consider that?
Well, one thing you can do, and again, we have on the website, is how to opt out of Medicare, which this is a really big thing because so many people derive their income. One thing that a lot of doctors don't realize is how much money patients are willing to spend for your time. We play ourselves cheap. We've been kind of demeaned and turned into fungible objects by being called a provider. And I am not a provider. I'm a physician. And period, end of story. And we've ourselves been kind of brainwashed into thinking you're just another cog in the wheel. Well, you aren't. You're important. And patients will pay for that. And even if you have patients that don't have a lot of money, just as I did when I had office practice, you charge them $20. You charge them something so they appreciate the care, but you don't have to rip people off. And amazingly, if you don't use the government programs, you will save money because that's $30,000, $40,000 you don't have to pay an office worker to do all that paperwork. Patient walks in, you provide a service, and just like they do when they go to Costco and buy some food, they give you money or a credit card and say, okay, I've had my service. And the patient, no one can afford the hospital, so patients still need some sort of hospital insurance. But you don't need the full package, and you'll come off cheaper just seeing the doctor and paying the doctor in cash. And of course, the doctor can charge less because they don't have the same kind of office overhead. So we have tips on all that and how you opt out without getting into trouble this sort of thing. And most doctors don't know this. And again, when you have come out of medical school with these hideous bills, it's very attractive to be hired by somebody and not have to worry about it. But even if you've done that, there is a way out.
That's awesome. Dr. Singleton, we've got about a minute left. If you would, please give us the websites again where people can go. And also tell us just a little sneak preview about your wonderful work in El Salvador and what you were doing down there and why.
I went to El Salvador with a friend who helped out people in small towns that had been ravaged during the revolution. And we went to very small villages And the people had nothing, even though they had National Health Service, so-called, that they didn't even have ibuprofen or Tylenol, simple things. And so we just at first started off helping people with simple problems. And I think the government was so shamed. The next year, they sent some government doctors over to our clinic.
That's awesome. Well, Dr. Singleton, we thank you so much for being with us. Again, folks, she was the past president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. You can find them online to help you find an independent physician in your area. Thanks for watching, folks. Thanks for listening. God bless you all.